This is Alan Nathan of Radio America sitting in for Greg Corumbus and reporting for WorldNet Daily. President Obama's handling of health care reform is up against declining poll numbers, as reported by the latest Washington Post ABC survey. Since April, the support has dropped from 57% to 48%, while opposition has risen from 29% to 44%. The economy and deficit have also shown similar slippage. Recently, the Senate passed a bill out of its health committee, but that faces a tough battle once it goes to the full Senate. The House has three committees working on it: the House Ways and Means, Education and Labor, and then Energy and Commerce. The first two seem to have a greater consensus, while Democrats on the Energy and Commerce Committee have proven far more resistant. Joining us to help explain the political viability of Obama's health care goal is John Nichols, senior writer for The Nation magazine. John, welcome aboard.
It's great to be with you, Alan.
One of Obama's more problematic developments, the Congressional Budget Office's position that they needed to shoot it down. CBO Director Elmendorf recently wrote that, quote, under current law, the federal budget is on an unsustainable path because federal debt will continue to grow much faster than the economy over the long run. In your estimation, how can the president turn back the momentum?
Well, I think the president's in a very tough situation. That Congressional Budget Office study is the most important statement that will be made about the health care fight for this reason. Obama is trying to weld together two different ideas, two different concepts for delivering health care. It's not a functional approach. He's trying to have a major public option while maintaining the private sector. You can't do that and make it work. And what the CBO has essentially said is, you know, you're not going to get the savings you think you're going to get. You're going to end up with the worst of both worlds. And so the Obama people, who, it should be noted, have not presented a plan.
It's possible that everybody wants change, but without the cost.
Well, now, nobody wants the cost, yeah, of course.
Well, another concern has been, and this is especially amongst the more conservative Democrats, such as centrist Democrat Mike Ross from Arkansas. He and a lot of the other blue Democrats are expressing a lot of concerns, and they're actually threatening blockage of Obama's health care plan, at least as it relates to their own committee, the Energy and Commerce Committee. They're especially concerned about the corrosive impact that might be brought by the public option, because no private health care provider can really operate unless they meet the solvency standards necessary to justify their existence. That's something the government, of course, never has to worry about. In your estimation, how much of a stumbling block might this prove to be in the long run?
I think it's a huge stumbling block. I think there is there are real divisions within the Democratic Party on this issue. If you were to poll most Democratic members of Congress, you would find that they are either supportive of or lean toward a single-payer plan, which has the government handling the whole operation. You do have a portion of the Democratic caucus, mostly from southern and some interior western states, that is more in favor of something more private sector. I'm not going to say that all of them are corrupt. Of course, there are many members who take huge amounts of money from the healthcare industry, and we have to recognize the truly corrosive impact of campaign donors and campaign financing. But many of these members genuinely do come from places where they have existing healthcare systems that are at the very least functional, and they're very fearful that a government plan might upset things in dramatic ways.
Well, it should be pointed out as a quick aside that the vast majority of people currently engaged in one health care option or another are repeatedly saying that they're happy with that care, yes?
Yeah, I mean, well, let's take a look at, you know, you always hear American news media criticize the Canadian health care plan, mm-hmm. and, you know, American politicians criticize the Canadian health care plan, but in Canada, 96% of Canadians say they like their plan. So the fact of the matter is, when you're in something, the only way you're going to get out of it is if you see something dramatically better. And this is where the problem exists with health care reform. We have the worst of both worlds in the United States at this time. We have incredibly expensive health care that tens of millions of Americans don't have access to. So it's sort of a nightmare scenario. We need reform radically. But Barack Obama has, in my opinion, already stumbled badly in this regard because he's not providing leadership.
John, let me ask you this. Can reform really take place unless there is a panoply of sacrifice from both sides of the aisle? For instance, we have, as one of the more corrosive elements of health care, the challenge over doctor costs. And part of the doctor cost is always driven by the risk of malpractice lawsuits. And until we have tort reform, can we ever look forward to a declination of those malpractice lawsuits? It seems as if...
Probably not, Alan. And here's the interesting thing. The only way you're going to get a reasonable tort reform and even get near it would be under a fully public option. You're not going to get it with the private sector running things. And so tort reform is a dead issue so long as you have a private sector healthcare system. Because painfully and unpleasantly, lawsuits have become the vehicle by which people force the private sector to deliver care or to, in effect, apologize for a failure to deliver care.
I know, but isn't part of the impetus of the mess also attributable to the almost absent prima facie standards that have to be achieved? You may recall a year or so ago, a judge sued a dry cleaner for millions of dollars for a missing suit.
Absolutely, the absurd cases. Clearly, and there are absurd cases.
And it should be pointed out that he lost in his effort, but the bottom line was he was allowed to pursue that suit and accordingly bring about great injury to the very people who were the subject of that suit. Despite the silliness of its foundation. But I don't want to get too far afield. Recently, White House Budget Director Peter Orszag said that the only reason why the numbers are a problem is because of the Medicare reimbursements to doctors. However, the only reason why the AMA now supports Obama's plan is because he and the Dems reversed on their original decision to cut them out. Can Orszag really convincingly argue that, hey, but for these obstacles, there are no obstacles?
Well, Orszag can say that if he wants. The fact is, it's a completely unrealistic statement. The fact is, again, I want to keep going back to this core point that we've made several times in this conversation. The Obama administration is providing zero leadership. It is not in the driver's seat at this point on health care reform. And that's a big problem because we are going to have five different health care reform proposals running from something that's quite centrist over probably to something that's quite on the left. And then you're going to have a Republican Party that is almost universally in opposition. The end result is that it's a recipe for disaster where nothing happens.
What about the possibility that we should just have it taken out of the workplace? The logic behind that is that we would see an immediate declination of cost because HMOs would automatically become answerable to more people, because right now the way it's situated, they deal simply with employer clients,
and these employer clients,
of course, have many patients. And the paradox is, of course, the Republicans seem a little disingenuous because they say that they want to take it out of the workplace, but at the same time they're taking money from the very HMO lobbyists that want the direct opposite. While Democrats seem disingenuous because, well, they want to reduce the cost for the little guy, they refuse to buck the American Trial Lawyers Association, getting in the way of the very tort reform that could help reduce those prices. What's your sense of it all?
Well, my sense is that healthcare should never have been tied to the workplace. And it is only tied to the workplace because in the late 40s and early 50s, when Harry Truman proposed health care reform in the United States, it didn't happen. And at that point, it was the AMA that blocked it, largely. And so the unions then went into the workplace and started negotiating health care protections within contracts. It was a terrible compromise because of two reasons. Number one, we have a huge portion of Americans who don't work for a living because they are children, because they are elderly, because they are unemployed, because they actually do work very hard for a living, but they may be a mom at home rather than in an official workplace. And so all of these people have to sort of somehow link into this broader system. The reality is the system ought to provide health care to all, and linking it to the workplace is an absurd construct. And we found how absurd, because not only don't we get a good, sound healthcare system in this country, we also end up in a situation where a lot of employers are responsible, decent employers, people who want to take care of their employees, who are struggling, even failing, because of the cost of healthcare.
Isn't another dilemma surrounding the fact that if the public option is pushed, a lot of employers are going to find this to be the equivalent to a great fiscal get-out-of-jail-free card. They'll just ensure that their own health care options are comparatively cost-prohibitive, and as a consequence, naturally drive their employees to the public option, thereby ensuring an escalation of the very cost Elmendorf has expressed concern about.
Well, look, the bottom line is this. If you have a robust public option, it wipes out the private sector.
Which adds more of a burden to you and I as the taxpayer, yes?
Well, not necessarily, because, of course, we now are paying a huge amount for, I pay, you know, I think $200 every paycheck to get health care. So if you actually developed the right kind of system, it wouldn't necessarily. Our overall cost would be less. But the bottom line is that, again, whether I'm right about that or you're right, whatever the detail, the one reality anyone who knows anything about economics will tell you, if you have a robust, well-structured, functional public option, it will make it absurd for any employer to buy into the private option.
This essentially would almost, if you will, solidify socialist health care, would it not? I mean, it would just
Yeah, it would be. It's a backdoor route that would get you there, and then we would have, you know, we'd be like Canada, Germany, all these other countries, which, you know, their businesses are much more able to compete. And so, yeah, we might get more quickly to a system that was that did provide health care for all, control costs, and was good for business. But the fact is, I don't see us moving anywhere near that right now because of, again, what I think is a failure of leadership on the part of the Obama administration, and also an incoherence on the part of the Democrats. I think they should be doing more.
We've got about 47 million unemployed. 15 to 20 million of them seem to be comprised of youth who may be very well making good money. They've just decided not to engage in health care coverage.
Not unemployed, Alan, but underinsured.
Underinsured, I apologize. You have 47 million. Actually, you have 47 million uninsured, 15 to 20 million of which are young and perhaps very well employed. They just don't yet choose to engage in health coverage. They feel young, they feel healthy and vibrant, they don't want to bother. Another 12 million are comprised of illegal immigrants. So you're left with 20, 25 million as the core group needing help. And yet the package presented thus far by the Democrats would, according to the CBO, leave 18 million of the 47 they assert they want to cover uncovered. How do you see them reconciling that disparity?
Well, it's indefensible and ridiculous. And again, this is a failure to get serious about the issue. If you're going to propose a national health care plan, make it a national health care plan. Deliver care to everybody, and do it through, admit what you're doing. This is exactly, I want to emphasize, this is exactly what Bill Clinton did. And, you know, may have different names, may have different approaches, but the end result is the same. When you try to mix private and public, it's like oil and water. It does not work. And to play that game is to begin at a point of compromise that is dysfunctional. And so this is not, you know, and also I would emphasize that you were mentioning that there's, you know, roughly 47 million uninsured. They are, by and large, not the issue. There's a handful of people who don't have insurance that really are a major issue. But the real issue in this country is the underinsured, the roughly 50 million Americans who have some kind of insurance, but it's almost fully unreliable. They pay money, but if they get sick, they end up paying more, and even, you know, we have cases of people with insurance losing their homes when they get sick.
We're running out of time, but I want to thank you very much for being with us today. We genuinely appreciate it. This has been John Nichols, senior writer for The Nation magazine. John, thanks again.
It's a great pleasure to be with you, Alan. Thanks for the good questions.
Appreciate it as well. This is Alan Nathan of Radio America sitting in for Greg Corumbus and reporting for WorldNet Daily.